The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to the Cybersecurity and Cloud Podcast, the podcast where we learn from cybersecurity experts how to stay safe, private, and secure on the cloud and in code. CSCP is hosted by Francesco Cipollone, your cybersecurity friend with a passion for all things cyber and sharing stories of other professionals with you. This episode is brought to you by the generosity of Phoenix Security Limited. Phoenix helps startups and enterprises solve complex software security supply chain visibility by leveraging the power of correlation and contextualization. Discover how Phoenix Security helps CISO and security engineers act fast, prevent burnout, and implement DevSecOps at the speed of cloud. Phoenix Security. Correlate, contextualize, and act on risk with one click. Let's dive in.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Cybersecurity and Cloud Podcast. This is your host, Francesco. And today, as we usually do, we have another session on with a fellow veteran. And this is something that we do on the podcast, is usually something that we find particularly useful for people that are considering a career in cyber and are maybe exiting the military or ex-veteran, to see that actually it's possible and actually adds a superpower on what you do. And today we have the pleasure to have Lester Chung, that is an ex-naval combat officer. Lester has previously been in the military and then transitioned over to the more financial institution and more the civil space. Well, Lester, without further ado, give us, our audience, a little bit of your background and welcome to the show.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for having me, Francesco. So my name is Lester Chung. Like what Francesco mentioned, my background is in the Navy. So I'm a naval combat officer for about 12 years with the Singapore Navy. In that time, I mean, obviously, there's all the experiences of running operations, leadership, and all the usual things that you expect from veterans. But my specialty was in wargaming and simulation, as well as exercises. And that has given me a direct input or direct experience into what I'm doing currently, which is running a security exercise program for a North American financial institution. So not everyone would have that similar experience or direct how I managed to leverage my experience in the military directly into what I'm doing in the corporate world right now. But I believe there are a lot of parallels which anyone, in fact, can bring to any cybersecurity organization. And I think this is just one unique experience that I hope to share, and we can dive more into it.
That's brilliant. Thank you. Thank you very much for coming into the show. I think it's a particularly interesting aspect and field that is not very common. And we have simulation exercise. We start seeing in the industry more PCP and DR simulation, but war room and war game simulation and effectively extended threat modeling is something that is so particularly interesting, because I think it makes the problem feel real. A lot of the time in cybersecurity, we talk about threats, we talk about this generic problem that might or might not happen, if not, something might happen. But the tabletop exercises, the war room simulation and games, I think it makes them very real and very tangible to all the audience, so can involve all the audience. So in your personal experience, how do you see this kind of exercise, and in general, how do you see the industry going forward, and if it's maturing towards more of this exercise versus when you started?
Yeah. So I think what you pointed out was really hit the nail on the head, where it becomes real. And because a lot of organizations, when they start on their cybersecurity journey, their build out, it feels very painful because there's a lot of rigor, right. a lot of theoretical understanding and hard work from things like mapping out all your IT resources, mapping out your threat surface, getting your vulnerability cycles into place. It's not sexy, right? We all know it's painful.
Not at all.
It is. But it has to be done. So
yes.
I think where exercises come into play, it is flexible enough to help companies, regardless of wherever they are in their cybersecurity maturity. So if they're just starting out, then we can obviously run and design simple tabletop exercises just to get the juices flowing, get the executives thinking about, okay, if a ransomware were to hit, what are the 10 things I need to consider. Mm-hmm. So a tabletop exercise, a simple one, would start to get them thinking about some of the difficult questions and help them understand, why is my CISO asking me to spend X amount of dollars to do so many things? And so I think that's, for a company that is starting on their journey, a simple tabletop would hopefully open their eyes. And of course, if we go up the maturity scale, once you have your build out of your SIM, your SOC, all your tools to detect, to even reverse malware and detect some of these things and block, that's where I think not many companies are able to do so, to advance into more adversary emulation sort of exercises, where the red team takes on the persona of an advanced persistent threat actor and attacks your company's networks. So that takes a certain level of maturity to really sort of pay dividends to the more complex exercises that are available out there.
Brilliant. And thank you very much for bringing that, because it's a particularly interesting initiative that sometime in our industry, organization and vendors try to sell and sell, you know, this fantastic tool that solves all the problems in the world, but people are still, and simulation are still, I think, super important, and a perception of it from a tool saying is red to a person actually making it real, contextualizing and bringing it real to life with an exercise, I think adds a totally different spotlight to the problem. And what do you think? Maybe tell me more of the stories that you've seen, when you've seen maybe leaders or organization or people that have normally been detached from the problem, getting more embedded into the problem and more kind of aware. Like, when did you see the light bulb coming up, or the aha moment coming up from the other person?
So I think a lot of stars need to align for people to realize, okay, this is real, this is important. So I think the threat is real. No one can avoid it anymore. It's become one of the largest risks to the financial institution or even to countries at this point. And I think, unfortunately, that helps sell the story, right? I mean, there's no better incentive or better story than the last incident that happened, or whatever is the largest incident that just happened to your peer company, your competitor. And that's where I think exercises, you see, when something happens to your peer institution, it is a, yes, you can do your after action review, you can do your post-mortem, you can do your research study all you want. You pull out the top 10 things and you try and implement it. But it is, you don't get the value of, okay, being put on the hot seat and really diving into their position and say, okay, if I were to encounter the same problem at the same scale, am I ready to respond even better than company A? And that's where exercises bring the leaders into that situation. It gives them the opportunity to exercise their clarity of thought, their prioritization in their business, what's really important. Mm-hmm. And that's where they get, at the end of the day, that's where the practice comes into play. And when, touch wood, a real incident happens, they would be more comfortable because they have gone through those difficult conversations before, and they would have a bit more, hopefully more rigor in their thought and better considerations, rather than the first time imagine the first time they're being asked, do we want to pay the ransom? And if that's the first time in a real incident, that will be a difficult question to answer. But if we take the time and pressure out of a real incident, put it in a scenario exercise, give them the considerations, give them advice, give them lessons learned from other companies, and therefore they will come to a conclusion that would hopefully be much more full of wisdom rather than in the middle of a crisis try to decide something. We all know that we don't make the best decisions under pressure.
And actually, that's a really good point, not making decision under pressure, not making decision on the spot. How have you found your military preparation to give you maybe the edge or not the edge in those kind of situations? What are the tool and technique that you have discovered in the past that give you the edge in this new civil life and in this new kind of environment? You know, what did you discover? Something that you thought it was a good skill, but then it became a superpower in the second part of your life.
Yeah. I think that's a very interesting question, because in the military we are very used to exercises and failing at exercises, because we know that in war, in operations, there's no tolerance for failure. There's no margin of error, because if that happens, someone may lose a limb, someone, touch wood, lose their life. So the understanding that exercises are there for you to fail and learn quickly, so that when this goes live, we would have discovered our blind spots. We would have put in steps to mitigate it as much as possible, so that when we go live, when we go into operations, we go in with our eyes open rather than let's learn and discover along the way. Yeah, there's lesser tolerance or appetite for such risks in military operations. So I think when we look across to the corporate environment, I think there's a lot of lessons there. We should utilize exercises to inform ourselves of what can go wrong. Don't be afraid of the difficult questions, and try and address it as best as we can. Will we cover all the risks? Will we cover all possibilities? No, but planning for it, going through it, will give us that process, that thought process, give us that comfort, give us, and even simple things like knowing who we should talk to. If we were to encounter such an incident, whether it's an external vendor, whether it's a regulator, whether it's your law firm, you need to call them if something were to happen. Having walked through that, get update the numbers, get the correct names. I think all those are things that would help buy time and space in a crisis. It will help buy brain processing power, because you don't want to think about such things during a crisis. You want to reserve your brain for the most critical decisions. You don't want to be thinking about, okay, who should I call? Rather, go through the exercise, come out with the action items, get the list of 10 people you should call, write it down, put it in your playbook, so that touch wood, when that happens, pull it out, go down the checklist, yes, call, don't call, yes, no. So it saves you time, it saves you brain power, so that you spend that in a crisis. You think of it, if you only have $10, you need to spend it wisely. In a crisis, you don't want to be spending $5 on things that you could have thought about 10 days ago. So I think that's where exercises help buy time and space and brain processing power in a crisis.
Yeah, and that's I really like how you framed it, because it kind of formed the muscle memory on practitioner, and you remove all that, if you want, crumbs of activities that traditionally can be prepared. So trying to remove as much as possible of uncertainty and prepare your team as much as possible in case of crisis, so that they can have brain power, energy, and focus on really the problem that are there and then, and can be kind of figured out.
This episode is brought to you by the generosity of Phoenix Security Limited. Phoenix helps startups and enterprises solve complex software security supply chain visibility by leveraging the power of correlation and contextualization. Phoenix platform connects to your repositories, scanners, and cloud, correlates all the information, and provides you with a prioritized list of vulnerabilities that need to be addressed first. Discover how Phoenix Security helps CISOs and developers remove friction and maximize the use of DevSecOps professionals at phoenix.security. Phoenix Security, correlate, contextualize, and act on risk with one click.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
But maybe if you can mention a few things that people realize in a tabletop exercises that normally they wouldn't have thought about it. You know, what were your kind of discovery in this kind of aspect? What were your aha moment of the room on, oh, we never thought about that. If we didn't do this exercise, we would have never think that that particular critical element or particular critical person or particular critical process could fail because it just maybe one person, one process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think this things that the following things that I'm gonna mention about, it's gonna apply to whatever industry you're in, whatever company you're running. So one, let's just use ransomware as a simple example, but one that is very common and unfortunately gonna remain in our system for a while, I think. So are we allowed to pay the ransom? Are we even able to pay the ransom? Do we have a Bitcoin account set up? How are we gonna get the Bitcoin? What is the ramifications of paying that ransom? Legally, are we allowed to pay? What's the impact to our shareholders if we do pay the ransom? What are there media statements that we should put out before we pay that ransom? What are the media statements that we should put out after we pay the ransom? Yeah, and insurance, does that void our insurance? Do we need legal counsel before we even talk about this? Regulators, are they involved in our decision? Or do we just tell them before or after we make that payment? Agencies, official agencies, do we tell the police? Do we need to tell the police? Yeah, so there's so many. And this is just one question about paying the ransom. So right. You can see how it can... Yeah, and we need to ask these questions before it happens so that we can get our ducks aligned, we can get T's and I's crossed, and maybe we would, yeah, I mean, if we come to a realization of an answer that, oh, there's no way we can pay the ransom because it's just too much damage, then it helps the decision makers be put in a frame of mind to then quickly think about alternatives, meaning what is the damage? If we can't pay, if everyone is in agreement that we should not pay the ransom, then we can quickly move the conversation to, okay, so what? So what now? How do we recover data? How do we handle customer fallout? How do we handle shareholder fallout? How do we, it's because we then move to a damage control situation rather than trying to prevent further or prevent or recover from this damage. It moves us to the next phase of incident management, the next phase of thinking. And that's where the energy and time can be spent trying to, we know our hands are tight, but rather than spend the time finding out that our hands are tight, let's realize that our hands are tight way early, and then we can spend that energy on the next best thing that we can do. How do we recover? How do we protect our reputation? How do we then recover data? How do we stand up alternative payment systems if that's what's being hit? Yeah, so I think that's, yeah, there's some examples of the different types of questions that have popped out when we run a simple ransomware exercise. And hopefully that helps any company, anyone that is a potential victim of ransomware, which nowadays seems to be anyone and everyone. So I think those questions are useful to start thinking about. If you are a CISO, to start asking your board some of these questions, obviously help give them some guidance, help pull in some legal teams to answer the hard questions before you bring it to the board. Of course, a lot of this can be done prior. A lot of it can, at the end of the day, it's a lot of planning, research, and due diligence before we can even start asking some of these questions.
And actually, on that point, on the planning part, I wanted to ask, you know, you mentioned, you know, discussing this thing with the board, discussing this thing with the team. How are usually those war game played, and what kind of different level of question depending on the audience? How do you plan for, like, okay, let's plan for a ransomware exercise, or let's plan for a data breach exercise? You know, do you talk with the board first? Do you talk with the team? Who do you involve? How do you structure those exercises?
Yeah, so I think that's very important. That comes down to what are your objectives of the exercises. So I think that is, yeah, first and foremost, has to be very clear why and what are the objectives of a particular exercise. So and that would branch out to how and what type of exercises you would use. So for example, if our objective is to exercise the decision makers about reaction or responses, and it can be sort of broken down into a few categories. One is legality point of view, what can we do? Another is communications, external, internal, how are we going to handle that? And third, maybe is from an IT perspective, how can we mitigate and how can we recover? So if those are the three broad topics, so to speak, then the next thing you need to think about is, okay, who do I need to answer those questions? Because you don't want to pull in your highest leadership and then start talking about IT problems. You'll lose them after five. You lose them after 5 minutes, and you'll never see them again for any other exercise, right? Because we know they don't have the patience. And fair enough, they are paid big money to not to hear your IT solutions. They're here to hear your recommendations and your best technology solution. So the objectives would drive the type of questions, would drive the type of exercises. So if your objective of the exercise is to test your security controls, is to test your incident response, and test your a bit more technical risk mitigation type of scenarios or objectives, then your exercise may take on a bit more functional. So whether it's a specific pen testing or like I mentioned earlier, on adversary emulation, that's where you get your red team or a vendor's red team to go a bit wild and really test the controls that you have in place, so that one, you are assured that in the real world, your controls work. Because we all know, yes, there's testing before you launch your tools, but the test is written in the test case, step one, step two, step three. Detect, yes, great, pass, let's launch this. But that's not how threat actors work, unfortunately. I mean, yes, we can write the test scripts as close as possible, but threat actors are going to move quicker than your tools. They're more creative. They have no ethics. So that's where, if your objectives of the exercises are to test your sensitivity of your tools, how does your SOC detect, escalate incidents, communicate about it, how do they pull in other teams to help because like the SOC doesn't have control of all your tools. Like networks has a whole separate team to manage networks. How do they then communicate what they want the network team to do? And yeah, I think that type of exercise would take on a whole different, a bit more functional, a bit more risky. And that involves a lot more planning, a lot more risk controls, so that your CEO doesn't get woken up because your red team is testing something. So it falls back to what are your objectives so that you can be clear in what your design is and who's involved, what type of questions you're asking, and hopefully your exercise would be designed well enough to answer some of those objectives clearly.
Present. And in terms of not bothering or not waking up the senior leadership, how does CISO justify their return on investment? Because of course you need to involve several people, you need to stop maybe doing some more heavy pressure activity. So how do you usually justify the benefit of the return on investment of those activity?
So I think there are two incentives of how we can do it. I think one is always involve your risk team. Your risk team is there to help support you. Your risk team is there to help advocate for your activities because they should understand the risks. They should understand how your exercises help to mitigate some of the risks. So I think the CISO has to be lockstep with the risk team so that they are there to support each other. The CISO to answer risks, the risk to validate that, yep, this makes sense and we support it. So that's one that is, I guess, a bit more within control. The second is industry pressure from regulators. Exercises are being recognized more and more by regulators about the value that they bring to validate readiness, to validate resilience, because you can spend X amount of dollars on all the tools, but if you can't pull your thing together in an incident, then it's useless, because so what if you spend X amount for your latest DLP tool, but your SOC doesn't know what to do with it, your SOC doesn't know who to call, you don't know how to
respond,
block traffic. If that happens, then it is, yeah. So I think that's those two. One, make best friends with your risk team and go to the board together to help articulate the value. And then second, understand the regulatory environment now and use that to your advantage and really leverage on what the regulators are looking, not even looking currently, go above and beyond what they're looking for so that you become the example within your industry and they can go bother the other companies for the next 12 months after you deliver that.
That's a very good suggestion. It's like direct people to go and bother other people, other company, direct the regulator to point to other companies so you can focus on actually doing security. Not to say the regulation is not security, but just throwing it out there.
and if you, I think regulators are open to innovative ways because, while they are regulators, they also want to be ahead of the curve. They also want to provide standards and policies that not only solve yesterday's problems, but hopefully solve tomorrow's problems. So if you are able to then demonstrate that, bring them along on your journey, they would surely appreciate it. And that would help them move further ahead of the curve as well. And overall, the industry, the sector benefits from your thought leadership so that the entire sector becomes more secure.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for sharing that. Now that we're coming more close towards the time of our end of our chat, what do you think will be a positive message for leaders, for cybersecurity professionals out there, or your fellow veterans to change into the industry, to take the leap as you've done very courageously into changing completely scenario? What is the positive message that you want to leave our audience with?
Yeah, so I think the industry is certainly exciting. It's certainly growing. Unfortunately, the threat is real. The threat is growing. So, likewise, the industry has to. I don't think we will ever overtake the threat actor. That's the nature of the beast, and therefore, there's always going to be opportunities. There is always going to be a welcoming of good leaders, people who have been through a physical conflict, you will definitely be well equipped to handle or help value add in a cyber conflict. There are certainly a lot of parallels with the military and cybersecurity or cyber defense. So I think for veterans, yes, we may not bring the best technical skills to be able to handle some of the more specific type of work, but I think leadership, ability to handle crisis, confidence, communication, clarity, I think all those are useful traits that, yeah, I think the cybersecurity industry definitely can do more of or can benefit from. And yeah, so I think for leaders as well, the industry is still very young compared to a lot of other industries. And good leadership is required, because if there's no good leadership, people would get, you will lose your focus because there's just so many things to focus on. You will lose your motivation because you seem to be not able to win the war, right? Because it's day after day of alerts, incidents, and you, if there is no good leadership to motivate and keep the morale up, it is very easy to burn
get
out.
Fatigued.
It's very easy to lose fatigue, lose people, lose confidence, and that's where things start to fall apart, because you end up in a sense of helplessness, which is detrimental to quality of operations, which you need to keep at a higher standard in order to have the best chance against the adversary.
Brilliant. No, that's a very good point, that warfare and cyber warfare are becoming extremely close together. Brilliant. Lester, thank you so much for coming to the show. If anybody wants to follow more of your advice, you're very active on LinkedIn, but can you give us where you operate, where they can find you, more of you?
Yeah, so I think LinkedIn is probably the easiest way to keep up with some of the things that I share. I write a lot about exercises and drills, because that's my area of specialty. Yeah, so if you can look for me, Lester Chung on LinkedIn, and that's where I share most of my information.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Lester, for sharing with us the cyber warfare and the way the people from military can then re-skill in cybersecurity in a very different way and gain their superpower. So everybody, thank you so much for listening. And this was Francesco. Stay safe and stay combat ready out there. And if you're a veteran that is considering a move in cybersecurity, we've done tons of podcasts, so please do consider it, because we need more of you in the industry. Lester, thank you very much for coming to the show, and thank you for sharing.
Thank you so much, Francesco. Enjoyed myself thoroughly. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. Stay safe.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode. Please leave us a review on Apple Podcast and post it on social media tagging Cybersecurity Cloud Podcast for a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card. Discover other episodes at www.cybersecuritypodcast.com.